Hello and welcome to Meetus Pod, episode 18. I'm your host, D.E. Meetus. I've been sitting on a bunch of stories for way too long, and it feels good to be producing Meetus Pod again. If you're enjoying the show, let me know. mail@meetuspod.com or @meetuspod on Twitter. But the best thing you can do is share the show. On this episode, we have two stories for you. The first is a flash fiction story from James Moran. James Moran is a professional astrologer who regularly publishes articles, fiction, and poetry. His published works can be found at jamesmoran.org/the-creation-playpen. A link will be in the show notes. Inventor by James Moran. He remembered the names of the first 50 robots he invented. After 50, he grew concerned. Daily, he encountered not only robots whose names he could not recall, but totally unfamiliar robots he did not even remember building. On the dusty floor behind his workbench, where no robot could see, he knelt and begged Mother Earth to swallow the growing village of robots crowding his property. He prayed so hard that he shook, and he shook so hard that he didn't notice the earthquake until splinters showered him. He tumbled through the fissure in the floor. Cool soil enveloped him and kneaded him in a peristaltic flow until he was deposited on the floor of a tall, dim cavern. All around him, women made of polished gold stood on thick thighs, strong arms knotted over their chests. They did not speak. He finally asked, "So will you do it?" When they didn't answer, he asked, "Will you destroy the robots?" Together, they turned and marched out of the cavern. Once alone, he cried himself to sleep. When he awoke in his bed, his room was empty. The curtain billowed in the breeze. He stood, crossed the room, and looked out over an utterly vacant field. He spent the following 2 days going on walks and sipping tea in quiet serenity. On the third day, he tiptoed over the fissure in the floor of his study, sat at his workbench, and set about constructing another robot. Our next story comes to us from Todd Wells. Todd Wells lives in Chicago. He has 3 children and 1 wife. He dabbles in time travel in that he plays bass in an 80s cover band. You can visit Todd's website at traveldiaryofamadman.com. The voices you'll hear in this episode come to us from Sarah Gertrude, Spencer, Larry Blydner, Gregory Foreman, and me. Sarah Gertrude is a voice and on-camera actor based in Austin, Texas. Originally from Wisconsin, she is known for her casual Midwestern attitude and overall quirkiness. Spencer is the host of Bowl After Bowl with his wife Lorian, and host of Ablecraft with his bandmate Abel Kirby. Larry Blydner is the host of That Larry Show. Gregory Foreman is an actor, writer, podcaster, and publican, who diversifies an intense amount of waking hours with a vibrant dream state. When not concocting ambitious geopolitical movements or manifesting creative spaces, he is often seen catering to the whims of his 2 young children. Should you wish to hone his considerable multi-talents and utilize them for your project, he is always available for consideration. Links to all of their work will be in the show notes. Without further ado, here's our story. Household Appliances by Todd Wells. Kobe shook the container and tried again. A trickle of orange juice dribbled around the block of ice that had formed in the bottle. He checked the thermometer in the refrigerator and sighed. It was back down to 21 degrees. Kobe drank the 1.5 ounces of liquid he had been able to extricate. At least it was cold. He was not looking forward to another round of phone calls with Irwin, the developer who sold them the condo. Kobe and Marcia had moved in 1 month ago, and things had started malfunctioning almost immediately. Unfortunately, Irwin had their money, leaving the young couple with little leverage. As Kobe thought about the next round of phone tag he would have to endure, he saw through the bay window the strange old man on the other side of the street. He was staring at their house again. The old man looked quirky, like he shopped for clothing at a dumpster behind a tweed factory and was unaware that combs had been invented. But he did not look threatening. Kobe had never followed up on the old man because every time he appeared, there was inevitably some house issue requiring Kobe's full attention. That morning was no exception.
Ah!
Marcia's cry echoed through the house. She strode into the kitchen.
The Wi-Fi just went down again, right before I could send the email off to the Dallas office. Do you want to call Erwin again?
Kobe wanted to do anything but make that call. Still, he nodded. Marcia picked up the orange juice container, shook it, and sighed.
I'm late. Do what you can. I'll see you tonight.
Kobe's wife kissed him goodbye and left for work. Kobe grimaced at the task ahead and prepared to call, but his phone couldn't get a signal. Both disappointed and relieved, Kobe got his things together and left for work too. Kobe moped as he walked home from the train station that evening. Earlier, a brief and unpleasant phone conversation with Erwin had put Kobe in a worse mood, a difficult feat. Erwin had blamed Kobe and Marcia for the glitches and refused to take any more remedial action. This could be traced back to when the burglar alarm had gone off at 2 a.m. and Marcia, not pausing to read the manual, yanked the whole thing out of the wall. He argued that this voided any warranty, dismissing Kobe's assertion that the burglar alarm had nothing to do with the refrigerator. Looking down as he walked and dreading to find out what else was no longer working, Kobe didn't see the old man until he almost tripped over him.
Your house, is everything working properly?
Startled, but also defensive that he owned a house in which nothing worked properly, Kobe replied,
Who are you?
The old man looked back towards Kobe's house and answered,
My name is Martin. I used to run a repair business there.
Martin waved his hand in the direction of the house. Kobe thought he was beginning to understand. This older gentleman was grappling with an echo of the past ringing in his ears, touching and harmless. Kobe could wish this salt of the earth well, then forget about it and move on.
You're in great danger.
Kobe looked Martin over again.
You don't look dangerous.
Well, back in the 70s, before everything became disposable, I repaired household electronic items, toasters, televisions, ham radios. I enjoyed it, probably because I was good at it. When a customer dropped off a broken appliance, I didn't just fix it, I improved it.
Martin's gaze grew unfocused as he reminisced.
After I worked on them, televisions didn't need aluminum foil on the antennas. Radios sounded like you were right there in the station with a DJ. Toast browned perfectly every single time.
This last item resonated with Kobe, as his toaster had recently started making bread soggy.
I discovered how to reorganize the circuitry in any piece of electronic hardware so that the appliances at most basic level wanted to succeed.
Martin turned to Kobe, and for the first time, he could see the clarity in Martin's eyes.
I gave them instinct. I wired them for the ability to see, from all angles, the task they had been designed for, and let them decide how to accomplish it.
Martin clenched his gnarled hand into a fist. He tensed up briefly before continuing, now with an air of regret.
But I wanted more. Too much. I kept improving the electronics until one day...
Kobe, now enwrapped, tried to guess the ending.
You gave them artificial intelligence?
Martin's mouth bent into a wry smile.
No, there is nothing artificial about it. I made them sentient.
Kobe considered this.
Instinct, I can understand, but what good is a sentient appliance?
None. Before, they ran smoothly. Did exactly what they were supposed to. Once they were thinking and knowing, they became needy and petulant. I couldn't just turn on a lamp anymore. I had to ask nicely. Or if the alarm clock thought I was spending too much time with the stereo, it would go off accidentally in the middle of the night. Still, they were my children. I brought them into the world, and I was responsible for them. And I would be lying if I said I didn't enjoy their company, at least a little.
And that's why nothing works in our house? All the appliances are alive and in a bad mood?
No.
Martin sighed as his gaze drifted to nothing in particular.
Your appliances are not alive, but your house is haunted.
Marcia put her hand to her mouth and cried.
That is so sad.
Kobe had recounted Martin's tale to Marcia. He told her about the fire that Martin's stove had started in a fit of jealous pique after learning of Martin's plan to buy a microwave. The repair shop burned down, and none of the appliances survived. Martin held a service for them and buried the charred remains on the site. He planted a small garden as a memorial and visited it once a year to pay respects. The urban decay of the 70s and 80s ensured that the land was of no use to anyone and the appliances rested peacefully. But when the neighborhood began its revitalization process, the only question was whether the plot of land would be turned into a condo or a vegan coffee shop. Martin had anticipated that disturbing the grave might have consequences. So he approached Irwin during construction and offered to pay him to have the site excavated and moved to a more permanent location. Irwin took the money, but never moved the remains.
So the spirit appliances are taking over the bodies of the living ones?
Marcia asked as she looked at the food dehydrator with concern, but also empathy.
Martin says no, that our appliances don't have the enhanced nervous systems required for that. But the ghosts are able to disturb them and stop them from doing what they're supposed to.
Marcia patted the stereo speaker gently and asked,
So what do we do? How do we help them find peace?
Kobe explained Martin's plan. Martin, Marcia, and Kobe sat at the dining table waiting for their guests to arrive. The room was illuminated by 5 candles, because the overhead lights wouldn't turn on. The ghosts were clearly in a state of agitation, as nothing in the unit was working properly. The candle flames flickered in the updrafts caused by the heat and air conditioning running at the same time. From down the hall, they could hear the buzz of Marcia's electric toothbrush. Nearby, the low battery warning on the carbon monoxide detector chirped.
Are they angry?
Martin looked around the room.
I don't think so. My presence confuses them, but that's all.
Martin paused, then added,
However, I don't know how they'll react when we get started.
You have everything you need?
Double-checked Kobe. Martin only smiled and patted the worn leather satchel at his feet, which was good, because it was much too late to do anything if the answer had been anything but yes. The 3 of them sat without speaking, while different components of the condo whirred into action and abruptly stopped. When the knock at the front door finally came, Kobe and Marcia leapt from their chairs. Martin rose, slowly and deliberately, satchel in hand.
Well, good luck to all of us.
Martin turned to make his way towards the back door, but paused. He looked at the electric pencil sharpener that was spinning without any pencil inserted, and added,
Good luck to you too, old friends.
Once Martin had closed the back door behind him, Marcia and Kobe exchanged a final nervous glance. Then Marcia opened the door.
Hi. Good to see you again.
Irwin was clearly uncomfortable returning to the scene, but the bait had been too enticing to pass up.
I got a message from Kobe saying that you guys wanted to buy a second unit in the development.
Yes, come in. Thanks for coming by.
Irwin stepped into the foyer and looked up at the track lighting, which was blinking asynchronously. Marcia was ignoring it, so he pretended not to notice it too. He followed Marcia into the living room where Kobe stood to greet him. Irwin had worked in construction all of his life and was quite a bit more muscular than Kobe, yet the shadows of the candlelit room made Kobe look like a vampire. And Irwin unintentionally covered his neck with his hand.
Thanks so much for coming. We're really excited to buy another one of these condos. They look like great investments.
At that, the lights in the room blinked on. Then off again. As in the foyer, neither Marcia nor Kobe said anything, so Irwin played along.
Please, have a seat.
Marcia beckoned towards a chair. Irwin lowered himself into the seat with more caution than usual, though unsure exactly what he might be exercising caution against. He began.
So, you really want to buy another one?
Absolutely,
confirmed Kobe as the light in the hallway went out.
Okay.
said Irwin with a nervous glance at the hallway.
I brought specs for several of the units that will be completed in the next 6 months. Do you know how many bedrooms you're interested in?
The hallway light came back to life, then grew dimmer, but didn't go out. Kobe and Marsha looked at each other, questioning.
We hadn't really thought about that. Two, maybe? Or four?
How about three? Something right in the middle.
The hallway light changed its mind and grew brighter again. Confused, Irwin looked back and forth between Kobe and Marsha.
Actually,
stated Kobe with conviction,
the number of bedrooms isn't important. We want to see them all.
The hallway light throbbed.
Well, then, we can just start at the top.
And he flipped over the first of his brochures. Kobe and Marsha could hardly see anything in the dim light, but studied layouts and upgrades as Irwin went through his sales pitch. Now focused on getting the sale, he managed to ignore the malfunctioning systems and the possibility that his construction might be in some way responsible for their behavior, even when the television turned on by itself. Broadcasting a droning performance on C-SPAN, Irwin stayed on topic.
The shelving comes standard in particle board, but we can upgrade that to mahogany, which of course,
Irwin added with a knowing nod,
would dramatically increase the resale value of the unit.
Yes, that's an interesting point, but I wonder if teak might be a better...
A knock at the door interrupted Kobe's exposition.
Excuse me a moment.
Kobe walked to the door and looked through a peephole. It was Martin. Kobe opened the door only wide enough for him to slide outside. In a low voice, Martin asked,
"Do you have an extension cord?"
Kobe replied in a loud whisper,
"What do you need an extension cord for? Aren't you working on his car?"
"It was locked."
"I thought you said you knew how to break into a car."
"I do, but car locks have changed, I guess. The door in his pickup truck doesn't even have a keyhole."
Kobe felt a twinge of panic.
"So this isn't going to work?"
"It will if you have an extension cord."
Distraught, Kobe shook his head, but ran to the garage to retrieve his extension cord. As he handed it to Martin, he asked,
"How much longer do you need?"
5 minutes.
Kobe didn't like this turn of events, but there was no alternative other than to see it through. Kobe returned to Irwin and the sales pitch.
"Everything okay?"
"Sure,"
answered Kobe in a voice that was too high. Marsha was about to follow up, but a gurgling sound from the kitchen interrupted her.
"Excuse me just a moment."
Marsha pardoned herself and walked into the kitchen. A moment later, she reappeared.
"It appears the water in the freezer is now boiling. Would anyone like tea?"
Before either of the men could respond, they heard a cry of alarm from outside.
"No, you mustn't. That isn't the way."
"It's Martin. He's in trouble."
Kobe and Marsha ran out the front door. Irwin followed, confused. When they got outside, they saw Martin standing behind the rear of the truck, looking at something in the bed the others couldn't see. On his face, Martin wore a look of concern, or maybe it was fear.
"What are you doing to my truck? Get away from there!"
Martin moved away from the truck reluctantly. Irwin peered at Martin more closely.
"Wait a minute. I know you! You're that crazy guy who wanted me to take all that dirt to the cemetery!"
"And if you had only done it, we wouldn't have this problem now."
Irwin stood with his back to the truck, protecting it. And although he wasn't looking at his truck, he could see the expression on the other's face, so he knew immediately that something was happening behind him, and it was probably something bad. Irwin turned just as the hose from the drive hack that had been in his truck reached his head. The suction cup at the end locked onto Irwin's face, and the drive hack roared to life. Irwin's scream was sucked into the bowels of the drive hack. He fell to his knees, struggling to pull the suction cup from his head.
"You brought a dryvac to life? I thought the plan was to bring his truck to life and have the truck reason with him."
"I told you, I couldn't get into the truck. The dryvac was my only option."
"But why can't the dryvac reason with him instead?"
"Well, I explained the situation, but the dryvac was pretty upset about the whole desecration thing. I think it wants revenge."
Irwin had fallen to his back, still fighting to escape. Kobe looked at his extension cord, connecting the dryvac to an outlet on the other side of the condo.
"Should we pull the plug?"
"No, I don't want it to get mad at us, too."
Marsha took a step towards the dryvac. Kobe put out an arm to stop her, but Marsha shook her head. Kobe had misgivings, but he dropped his arm. Marcia lowered herself to her knees next to the dryvac. She put one hand on its chassis and cooed.
I know how angry you must be.
Marcia realized if she wanted the dryvac to hear her over the roar of the motor, she was going to have to speak much more loudly. So she tried again.
We can't let our emotions get the better of us. We have to find a peaceful solution that will end the torment of your electronic brethren.
The dryvac considered Marcia's plea. Its motor slowed to an idle, and Erwin was released. Erwin struggled to his feet, grasping for breath. As he fell into the cab of his pickup, he yelled,
"Oh, you people are crazy! Do you hear me? You're crazy! And if you think I'm going to deal with you and sell you another unit, you can bet it's going to be at my office next time."
The door slammed shut, and the pickup truck sped off. Colby looked up and down the street, and then said to the dryvac,
"We need to get you inside, before the cops show up."
Martin tapped the dryvac on its carapace and pointed to the extension cord. The dryvac didn't react, which they took to be acquiescence. Martin unplugged the cord, they carried the dryvac up the stairs into the living room, and plugged it in again.
"My children,"
cried Martin, raising up his arms.
"With the help of the dryvac, we have avenged your desecration. Please be at peace."
They waited. Slowly, the lights stopped blinking. The heater turned off, but the air conditioner remained on. Marcia's toothbrush stopped vibrating. Marcia and Colby looked around.
"So I guess that's it?"
"Yes, it feels different now."
Martin looked at the dryvac.
"You've been alive for 5 minutes. And you're already quite the hero."
The dryvac's motor purred in response. Martin considered the situation.
"If it's okay with you, I'll take our new friend home with me. I'll help him get acclimated, and then see what happens."
Marcia knelt and put her arms around the dryvac.
"Thank you so much. We couldn't have done it without you."
Kobe shook the dryvac suction cup with both hands.
"Yeah, thanks, man. You really saved us."
Martin left with the dryvac. In a few days, he installed a battery pack, and from then on, they were often seen going on long walks through the park together. Colby and Marcia checked in on them occasionally. Martin had promised he wouldn't bring any more appliances to life, but Colby and Marcia couldn't help but notice, whenever they came to visit, there was always a cute dustbuster sitting suspiciously close to the dryvac. But all that really mattered was that the orange juice never froze again. Metis Pod is a Metis Media production. All rights reserved unless otherwise stated. Don't forget to boost the show in your favorite Podcasting 2.0 app. If you don't know what that means, there will be a value-for-value explainer on the next episode. All of the stories we produce are copyright of their respective authors. Our theme music comes to us from Oddsprite. You can find more of their music at oddsprite.com. Be nice to your appliances, folks, and have a good one.